call the docket.
You may proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Hunter Sims. I, along with Johan Conrad and Lauren Challen Rogers, represent the petitioners in this case, the Daily Press and its reporter, David Retz. This is a FOIA case. The Daily Press ran two articles on what appears to be disparities in sentencing and other treatment between African Americans and whites in Virginia's criminal justice system. Daily Press wanted to pursue the matter further, and on July 17, 2015, sent a FOIA request to the Office of Executive Secretary asking for criminal information contained in OES's online case information system, OCIS, which is already available to the public. On the 23rd of July, 2015, that request was denied. Ultimately, we filed a petition in the Circuit Court for the City of Newport News, which held for the appellees, and we're here today on those types of issues.
Mr. Sims, may I ask you this? OES did agree to provide the information from the databases for the 50 clerks that consented.
Yes.
Has that information been retrieved by you?
Yes, it has.
All right, so we're only talking about the 68 that refused?
Correct. The ones I call the objecting clerks.
Now, of those 68, is there any evidence that OES produced any raw data that made it onto the web platform? Not software manipulation or coding, but raw data?
No. The only thing they produced was what we asked for, which is the publicly available information only on OCIS.
I'm sorry, I used poor terms. Did OES, is there any evidence suggesting that OES created the data that's in the data fields, created the raw data, the dates, the names, the conviction orders, the sentence, the data that the clerks typically create? And the question is, exclusively create?
Well, the evidence in the case was that when it was decided to make certain information public, the OES took the information in each clerk's, which participated, CCMS, which is Circuit Case Management System, duplicated that onto a separate system, then applied a Java-based program which screened all of the information except what is now publicly available. An example of that is attached to our opening brief of what is publicly available.
I guess my question is broader than that. Did OES create the raw data? Did they input the raw data, or did the clerk's offices in these various clerk's offices create the data that we simply platformed on a website?
The clerk's offices initially inputted the data into CCMS.
Right.
It was then duplicated onto a second system, screened by Java, and then made publicly available.
Okay. Did OES ever manipulate the raw data, change the raw data, or create the raw data in the first instance?
There's no evidence of any of that.
All right.
Anyway, it's important to look at the FOIA law rather than 17.1, which the appellees rely on. As we all know, the provisions of FOIA are liberally construed, exemptions are narrowly construed, records will not be withheld unless specifically made exempt. OAS is a public body. That's not at issue. And the records we seek are public records. They're defined under FOIA as records prepared or in possession of a public body. And these records, by the process that I just described in answering Justice Kelsey's question, are prepared by OES, and they are in the possession of OES. In fact, the evidence is, as to the clerk's offices, or the information that was produced to us by the 50 non-objecting clerks, those clerks could not even access the data. They had to ask OES to do it. OES did it and then passed it to the various clerks for review, and then the clerks gave it to us. So we don't think that the clerks had custody of the OCIS data, and they don't have any control of it.
Well, they can access the data, but obviously they would need a software program to distill the data into usable form.
Yes, that software program is a program of OES, as well as the computers, and all of the processing is done at OES with OES licensed programs and OES computers.
So is this case boiling down to a very simple proposition that if a government entity hosts data from another entity on a web platform that obviously uses software, that the hosting entity becomes the custodian under FOIA, as opposed to the creator and the generator of the information who has the arguably exclusive rights to maintain and to create it?
Well, we believe that in this instance, yes, that OES is hosting, they've got custody, they've got to respond to a FOIA request. Particularly in this case, it's to me bizarre that this information is out there. I mean, you've got a computer in front of you. You could get on the OES website and get this type of information right now. Anybody could do it. ISIS could do it. But for some reason, the clerks, while they're comfortable with the general public getting that type of information, they don't want us to get it. And it seems like to me that that's just not right under FOIA.
The clerks don't want you to get it.
Pardon?
The clerks don't want you to get it.
The clerks don't want it.
Well, why didn't you sue the clerks?
Well, we believe that the entity in custody of this information is OES, and FOIA says you make a request to OES.
So we should overrule the constitutional officers that are constitutionally required to create this data and to create these files? That OES should say, we're going to open up the information that appears to belong and be generated exclusively by the constitutional officers, the clerks of court, even though they're objecting, and they're telling us they're objecting.
Well, but I think under FOIA, we're not dealing with a constitutional officer. They don't have custody. The OES has custody. And they're the ones who have to respond under FOIA. 2.2-3704. That's why we made the request to them. In addition, if you look at FOIA, it does say that records required by the clerks to be kept by law are exempt from FOIA, but other records are not. And our argument on that is that none of the clerks have to use CCMS. That's a voluntary thing. They cannot have a system. They can use their own system. They can use a third-party system. They can use OES's system. And if they choose to use OES's system, they can also elect to have that data made public, some of it, through OCIS. They don't have to do that. So under the exemption, whatever is on OCIS is not anything required by law to be kept by the clerks. It's all voluntary.
This question, I know you're not asking for any CCMS data, But under your position, would that become FOIA-able as well?
Could you repeat that? I didn't
quite sure. Under your position, would CCMS data be FOIA-able as well? Does that domino fall if we agree with you on the OCMS point?
No, I don't think so. And to me, the main reason, the practical reason, is none of that data has ever been made public.
Okay.
I mean, that's the thing that...
But under FOIA, you don't have to make something public.
No, you don't, but it has to be a public record.
Okay.
And I don't think the CCMS data is public record. And also the CCMS data, and if you notice, we limited our request to after January 1, 2004. And that's the date that the legislature said that certain information is private and can't be out there. So we eliminated that defense, if you will, by doing that. But
would you agree that whether the documents have been made public or private, that the real question is who is the custodian?
That's one of the main questions in this case, yes.
So if the documents on OCIS are in the custody of OES, as Justice McCullough just asked, wouldn't the documents on CCMS follow that same pattern?
No. If you know from the record, Mr. Hayde testified in the case that CCMS and OCIS are two separate systems. We cited that in two different places in the record. I've got that cite if you'd like it.
Yeah, they are two separate systems, but as I understand the way the system works, they both reside here, not answering the question of who the custodian is, but both systems reside in OES.
They both do. That's correct.
And so if we accept your argument, using Justice McCullough's terminology, the domino would fall to CCMS as well, if the key is the custodian.
No, I respectfully disagree with you.
Okay, tell me why not.
I think that what distinguishes it is that by the way the data gets to OCIS and then is screened and then is made public, it's a separate system. It's basically a separate record. And whatever you decide today, if you decide to give us access to the data that we have requested for the clerks that we don't have it for, then that does not open any door to anybody trying to get all of CCMS. In fact, if you look at the 50 clerks who gave us the information, I mean, nothing's happened since then. I mean, nobody's trying to get judges' emails. The system has not cratered. We just have what the public can have, and we just have asked it in the system in the way we have because we don't want to have, under the current system, you know, to get, I know you know this, but to get information on a particular case, you got to know the circuit court and the name of the defendant. So that under FOIA, to me, if you require us to do that, that really defeats a purpose of FOIA. I mean, we want to use the information for the purposes I said, to look further into the judicial system of Virginia, the criminal judicial system, to see whether or not some of the things that we think may be happening are in fact happening. They may or may not be, but certainly a worthy cause to look into.
Does the worthiness of the cause override whether they are the custodian or not?
No, but I do think that, again, in answer to your question, there are two systems. They're separate. Mr. Hayes said that. And the fact that certain information from one system, one separate system, OCIS, is made public, is not going to cause dominoes to start falling so that everything in CCMS will be available by a FOIA request. And then there are a number of other statutes in that talk about information in CCMS and provide some other arguments for somebody who's trying to get directly to CCMS to defeat those efforts. I was hoping to reserve a little time. I've got a minute left. I would like to stop now, but I don't. If you've got other questions, maybe this is the time to address them.
Apparently not. Okay, 51 seconds.
Pardon?
You have 51 seconds.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
May it please the Court, Stuart Raphael for the Office of Executive Secretary. With me at council table is Will Prince, who represented the clerks that we impleaded in the trial court, and the Deputy Solicitor General, Trevor Cox. We attached to our brief the demonstrative exhibit that we used at trial, which would be the last page of the brief. And we used this to demonstrate what we thought was the right logic flow of how you analyze this case. And as Justice Powell said, and I think Mr. Sims acknowledged, the key question is who is the custodian? We made that the first question. And we think that if the court concludes, as we contend, that the clerks are the custodian, that is case dispositive, because as Justice Kelsey pointed out, the FOIA request here was not submitted to the clerks. They didn't sue the clerks. And under Code Section 2.2-3704J, the statute makes it clear that where one entity hosts records for another entity, it's the entity whose records they are that gets to decide whether to produce them. OES is sort of like VITA. OES is the VITA for the judicial system. Right? VITA hosts records for dozens, scores of executive agencies. OES is really the equivalent for the judicial system. Now, our argument for why the clerks are the custodians is really based on two branches. One is, as a matter of law, we think they are the custodians. But then we spent a lot of time at trial looking at how the process actually works, and the facts were overwhelming that the clerks are the custodians and OES is simply the administrator for the court system.
Doesn't custodian simply mean possessor under FOIA?
No. Yes and no. I mean, FOIA refers to possession, and it's certainly true that OES possesses the records because they host the system where the records are located. But 2.2-3704J makes clear that possession is not dispositive, right? And the other demonstrative that I wanted to refer the court to was the one I used at trial, which you can find at page 788 of the Joint Appendix, and it's basically an excerpt of all the relevant code provisions. And 3704J appears on page 794 of the Joint Appendix. And what it says is that where one entity hosts records for another for purposes of storage, maintenance, or archiving, the originating entity is the one that gets to decide whether to produce them. The other thing we pointed out at trial, and you can see this in the demonstrative exhibit, we highlighted in green every place in the code where the term the custodian appears. And it's used in the singular, and that makes perfect sense because when a FOIA request comes in, whether it's to VITA or to OES, you can't have two different heads making the decision whether the document is responsive or whether it should be produced. So, for example, OES hosts the records not only for the clerks but for circuit court judges and for the justices of this court. If, under the plaintiff's theory, because OES possesses those records, then it has to respond to a FOIA request. Now, in the reply brief, Mr. Sims argues that, well, there's an exemption under FOIA for documents prepared in anticipation of litigation, and so maybe a judge's notes, like the notes you're taking right now, would be exempt. But think about how that would work. The FOIA request would come into OES, which hosts your electronic records, and then OES would have to assert an exemption for that or ask you if you want to produce them. That's just not the way it works. The justices and the judges and the clerks are the custodians, the owners of the data. OES is simply the trustee. Just like if you hire, you know, IBM to operate your computer systems, that doesn't make IBM the owner of the system. So,
Mr. Raphael, you use an interesting term, host, which I don't see anywhere in 3704J. The terminology there is storage, maintenance, or archiving. What's the significance of your use throughout this hearing and your brief of the term host? Is that a global term for those three things? What is that?
Yeah, I think it fits comfortably with storage, maintenance, and archiving. The evidence at trial, I said that there was a legal argument for custody and a factual argument. If you want the record citations, they're in our brief, but they're at pages 396 to 97, where Mr. Hay described, The citations are in our brief for where the terms maintenance, storage, and archiving were used. But the hosting is a sort of a colloquial description of what this is. So the data only exists on the OES server. The data is, to Justice Kelsey's point, the data is input by the clerks, and they update it and maintain it. And I think Mr. Sims conceded that there was no evidence below that OES itself ever inputs or alters the data. The clerks themselves are doing it. Now, the basis for custody, as I said, is both legal and factual. The legal basis comes from, I think, at least three statutes, and I want to run through them. The first one is 17.1-242, which says that the circuit court clerk shall have custody of and shall keep all court records. And it goes on to include records stored in electronic format, whether it's on premises or elsewhere. And that term, general court records, was added by the 2014 amendment in Chapter 460. The reason that's significant is we think that that codified two attorneys' general opinions. One was from April 2002, which is at page 360 of the Joint Appendix, where the Attorney General said that CCMS records, these very records, are clerk's records and court records that only the clerk can grant access to. Not even a circuit court judge could order a clerk to provide access to allow the data in those records to be altered. In 2013, the Attorney General opined, and this is at page 703 of the Joint Appendix, that a governing body of the county could not order the clerk to provide access to records if the clerk didn't want to. The 2014 amendment, therefore, in our view, under this court's reasoning in Beck versus Shelton, plainly codified those two attorney general opinions. There are two other code provisions that I think are significant. The first is 17.1-225, and you'll find this at page 789.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. You'll find it at page 789 of our brief. I'm sorry, of our of the joint appendix. And what this provision says is that the clerk of the circuit court of any county or city may provide remote access, including internet access, to all non-confidential court records on an automated case management or other system maintained by his office and described in 17.1-242. That statute's significant because it shows the clerk may provide access, right? It confirms that it's the clerk who has custody. It's the clerk's decision whether to provide access. And it ties that idea to Code Section 17.1-242, which is the general provision giving clerks custody over court records.
Okay, so if each clerk has custody of the records from their jurisdiction, but OCIS essentially aggregates those records, then if indeed custodian is singular, each clerk is responsible for the records from the city of Richmond, in RICO County, wherever. But then would not OES be responsible for the aggregated records as the only custodian of the aggregated records?
No, and I think that there may be a misunderstanding in the question, which is that OSIS is different.
That won't be the first time from me.
OSIS is different. OSIS is not different from CCMS. The evidence was uncontroverted that the database in CCMS is copied verbatim every 15 minutes to OSIS. It's an identical database, so it's not different. When a clerk uploads data to CCMS, the clerk is uploading data to the portion of the database that is for that circuit court. Mm-hmm. So it's a giant database of which each clerk has access to his jurisdiction.
But which would be the records for which that clerk is the custodian.
That's correct.
Is the legally responsible for that one piece of the quilt.
That's correct. And the evidence.
But who is responsible for the entire quilt?
Well, it would be the collection of the clerks. And so in this case, when the FOIA request came in to OES, OES
said. But if custodian is singular, how could it be a collective?
Well, just like IBM has multiple clients, right? OES has multiple clients. They have your honors.
I'm following your argument where you say there can only be one custodian.
There's only one custodian for each office of clerk. Because
understood.
That clerk has custody over that clerk's records. So when the request comes in for either that clerk's records or all of the clerk's records, OES has to go to all of its clients and say, what do you want us to do? Do you want us to produce these or not? And the evidence was that is consistently how OES has treated the information. Now, the third, I mentioned the second statute, 17.1-225. The third statute I want to mention is the budget bill from 2016, which we cite in our brief. Chapter 780, Item 50C, the General Assembly required that the clerks send their case management data, their CCMS data, to the Sentencing Commission. And the last sentence says, upon transfer, such data shall not be subject to the Virginia Freedom of Information Act. The General Assembly obviously sees this data as not subject to FOIA, and it wanted to make clear that by transferring the data to the Sentencing Commission, it wouldn't lose its characteristic as not being subject to FOIA.
Are we permitted under statutory construction rubrics to take the language from the budget bill as indicative of the intention of the General Assembly in the year that it passed the FOIA provision?
I don't have a case citation at the tip of my tongue for that, but I believe that you have done that in the past. You've looked to what how the legislature has construed the statute as a whole, and I think that's pretty powerful evidence that the legislature sees this information as not being subject to FOIA, because they've said so now twice in the past 2 years.
But
so
they were capable of saying that within the code itself, were they not?
Well, they were, but we think they did. We think they did it in both 17.1, where they said that the clerks are the ones who have sole custody over court records, and they did it in FOIA also, in 2.2-3703A5, where they said that records that are required to be maintained by the clerks are not subject to FOIA.
Have there been any bills to amend FOIA to state that?
I'm not aware that there have been, but they were unnecessary because that's what the law had always provided. And until this case came along, no one thought that this data was not subject to FOIA. Now, I should point out, there was a December 2002 AG's opinion, which we cite in our brief. And back then, the April 2002 opinion was when the AG said this data belongs to the clerks and only they have custody over it. In December of that year, the AG said that the data has to be produced under both FOIA and under 17.1, the provisions in 17.1. And we view the 2007 amendment that added 2.23703A5 as legislatively overruling that provision, because it exempted from FOIA records that are required to be maintained by the clerk. Now, Mr. Sims points out, well, clerks don't have to create a database in the first place, and so they aren't required to maintain these records. But I think he's conceded that CCMS records are exempt, and they don't have to create CCMS records. But moreover, the law is clear that once a clerk creates these records, they do have to be maintained, and only the clerk can do that. And so I think that easily satisfies the requirement in 3703A5. Now, I do want to pass to the factual arguments for why we've shown now why, as a matter of law, these records belong to the clerks and the clerks are the custodians. But we spent a whole day trying the facts of that, and the facts were uncontroverted that that's how OES treats these records, and that's how the clerks treat these records. The plaintiffs argue that CCMS is a different system from OSIS. I've addressed that. We think that's a red herring. There's really no difference in concept between OSIS, which is a replication of the CCMS data, and a disaster recovery backup tape, which OES makes every night of all of your records and all of the clerk's records in case of a disaster. That's an exact duplicate. Under the plaintiff's theory, as soon as you duplicated the database, boom, OES now is the possessor of that and becomes the custodian of that. That just can't be right. It just can't be right. And having conceded that CCMS is not subject to FOIA, as Mr. Sims did, I think that is actually fatal to their position, because if you take a look at 2.2-3704G, it basically says that when you make a copy of a database or you transform the data into another form, it doesn't create a new record. So I think that concession is fatal to their position. I want to touch on Justice Kelsey's point about the limiting principle here. We don't think there is a limiting principle to the appellant's position. In the trial court, they argued that CCMS was subject to FOIA. They've pivoted on appeal and it said, well, it's not CCMS, it's just OSIS. But their theory is that as long as OES possesses a record, even if it's holding it for somebody else, then you can FOIA OES and get that record. And so they really have no limiting principle to show how that argument wouldn't apply to VITA as well as to OES. And it would lead, really, frankly, to chaos, because the testimony below from Mr. Ferguson, for example, the Arlington clerk, was that if he felt that he had lost control over his records, he would not use OES. He would hire a private vendor. And we point out in our brief that this really presents a serious separation of powers concerns. Similarly, if this court couldn't trust that OES would respect its emails because they might be FOIA'd, that disrupts the administration of justice. So it's much more of a disruption than what you considered in the Worrell case, where the question was whether the governor's phone logs would be discoverable, right? That would chill the governor from making phone calls. Here, it would chill this court and clerks from using the court's administrator that is set up to help make the judicial system run better in this commonwealth. So in sum, we think that to hold a government agency that simply hosts records for another agency subject to FOIA would wreak havoc on the judicial system and government operations. It would create two document custodians. It would lead agencies to want to use private vendors instead of governmental agencies. It would expose various agencies to having their records FOIA'd. And for these reasons, we think the judgment should be affirmed.
Thank you. Bob?
Briefly, Your Honor, 2.2-3704J requires a transfer. There's been no transfer here, and it's got to have a purpose for storage, maintenance, or archiving. None of those purposes were why the information went to OCIS. It was to make it public.
But you're thinking in terms of a paper world. Obviously, you're thinking in terms of a paper world. Obviously, the information's been transferred electronically.
Well, it's... You know, I don't think you can describe what occurred as transferring. It's just not that. And I think your question really is gets to one of the issues with this whole case is any difference between the paper world and the electronic world. And I think then you have to get back to the fact that under FOIA, you interpret it liberally to further the goal of FOIA, which is open government. And I just don't think you can say that there's a transfer based upon these facts. I don't think you can vary FOIA, the legislature can vary FOIA by the budget. If you look at the AG's opinion cited by Mr. Raphael, they have to do with CCMS, not OCIS. And in the end, this abstract, which is what it is, available to the public, and what we want is a new record.
Counsel,
you know, it's got some.
Counsel, your time has expired. If you could wrap it up very quickly.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. All right. Thank you, Counsel.